Hello, young professionals. Today I'm here with Dr. Andre Obola, who's going to talk to us about the Online Hate Prevention Institute. Dr. Andre Obola is the social media and online public diplomacy expert. He's the CEO of the Online Hate Prevention Institute and a consultant on various online projects. He received his PhD in computer science from Lancaster University, United Kingdom, and his LLM from Monash University, Australia. Dr. Obola has also been a postdoctoral fellow in political sciences at Bar Ilan University in Israel. Andre, welcome, and thank you very much for taking this interview with us. Andre, tell us a little bit about your work with the IEEE and how did you get involved, and what opportunities did you grasp as a result of that?
Well, like many young professionals, I got involved originally as a PhD student. I was going off to a conference and there were discounts for IEEE members, so I signed up as a member and took the discount. Little did I realize, of course, that I paid the membership fee and the university got the discount. I'm sure many people have fallen for that one in the past.
Absolutely.
But I've been involved now for 10 years through my PhD and then through further studies and my work here at the Online Hate Prevention Institute. I originally got involved as an active volunteer when I came back to Melbourne and, well, met up with the Victorian chapter. Originally I started volunteering, helping the then chair. We had a committee of one. With me, it became two. A year later, I took over as chair, built up the committee, and from there started getting involved at a first regional level and then at the global level. So these days I'm within the Computer Society. I'm a vice chair for awards and recognition for the Computer Society. And I handle things from our Distinguished Visitor Program through to various student scholarships and awards.
Excellent. Thank you, Andre. Now, you're very passionate about online hate prevention. Tell us a little bit about the Institute and what made you decide to tackle this major issue.
I started getting involved back when I was a university student. I was seeing various anti-Semitic literature and points being raised in student government debates. And I found a lot of it was coming from the internet. So it was material that was being published and then distributed and spread as hard copies and through speeches and other political discussion. One of the problems was that search results through Google, and at that stage there were many other search engines that were equally popular, the results from search engines were returning much more hateful content than legitimate real content. So I started working on trying to address this. And that was a task involving search engine optimization and trying to get different organizations producing decent content to at least talk to each other and support each other rather than just competing. From there, I moved across to Israel, did my postdoctoral fellowship, worked at an NGO at the same time, and started doing research into social media. Social media was still, well, things like Facebook were relatively young back then. And I raised the problem of hate speech propagating and going viral through these new channels. Little work had been done on it at that time, so my work became some of the foundational work in the area. I ended up coming back to Australia and gave a speaking tour and was told, well, someone needs to deal with this. A funder stepped forward and said, why don't you set up a project to deal with it? So I started working on that project, again, just focusing on anti-Semitism. After a couple of years, we realized that the challenge was a lot bigger than just anti-Semitism. It involved a wide variety of other types of hate speech. And the changes that needed to be made in order to tackle all of these different forms of hate were essentially the same. A lot of them were actual technical changes to the software, changes to policies, processes, etc. So we founded the Online Hate Prevention Institute, and we're turning 4 years old later this month. We started looking at not just the anti-Semitism, but also things like anti-Muslim hate, things like misogyny, things like discrimination against Indigenous Australians, homophobia. There's a wide variety of hates, right down to cyberbullying. And these days, we also do a fair bit of work looking at the promotion of terrorism and violent extremism. So all of that sort of comes together, both through our research and also nowadays through our tools. So one of our flagship projects is fightagainsthate.com, which is a piece of software that allows us to crowdsource reports on online hate.
So that sounds like a lot of valuable work out there. Now, you've been praised by diverse communities for your tireless work and also operating across the spectrum. Your work has covered topics such as, you know, sexist and racial abuse against women, managing the fine balance between right to freedom of expression and equally important right to human dignity, anti-Muslim and anti-Jewish online hate, and many others that you've mentioned. What are some of the currently hot topics in online hate prevention?
Two topics which are big issues at the moment are incitement to violence. So we've seen in the last month or so that there's been numerous attacks in Germany, for example, against refugees from Syria. And the government stepped in there saying that the social media companies are not doing enough to mitigate this problem. In Israel also, we've seen knife attacks, which have been inspired by posts on social media. And we've also seen a rise in more violent types of online misogyny. So people threatening rape against women, particularly on platforms like Twitter. Again, you know, the background levels of anti-Muslim hate, that's been rising. Anti-Semitism's always been high and it's still high. You know, the one success we've really had was on the anti-Indigenous hate within Australia, where it took some work to explain why certain phrases and certain expressions about Indigenous Australians were actually hate speech. But once the platforms understood that, nowadays, you know, it becomes very hard to find examples of this hate because we've got them taking most of it down.
Thank you. To date, what has been achieved with the Institute, and can you provide some measurable results and statistics?
Okay, so we've been growing year on year. Our main outputs really are our publications. So in the last 12 months, we've had 45 briefings produced. These are posts, usually the length of a blog post, sometimes a bit longer. And most of the time, they focus on a particular hateful page or video or a YouTube channel or a Twitter account. We give examples of the content from this account, and then we ask our supporters to report it. And most of the time, this content then comes down. Because our reports remain up, even once the content is removed, they help create more awareness of the problem and also more understanding of the way this hate is expressed. So far, well, over the 12 months with those 45 briefings, they were shared a total of 29,000 times.
Wow.
So that's sort of reaching a larger audience each year.
Certainly a large impact.
Yep. Our Facebook audience itself, we have a Facebook page at facebook.com/onlinehate. I invite people to follow us and join us. Our Facebook audience is about to cross the 22,000 supporter mark. So again, that's doubled in the last 12 months. The more people we have supporting us, the more impact we have when we ask people to help us report this sort of content. We also do a lot of work directly with the platform providers. So we send them reports and recommendations for changes. So a few weeks ago, I was in San Francisco. I met with Twitter and we had a discussion about ways of dealing with some of these problems. So some of those sorts of ideas from the discussions and the reports we have with the companies, you know, they can result in actual changes to the platforms and to the software.
And how did the companies in general respond? I mean, I'm just curious to know, you know, Twitter's a worldwide phenomenon. So, you know, how did Twitter respond to your conversation?
I'd say very positively. You know, we have an interesting relationship with all the companies because on the one hand, we feel we're trying to help them actually implement their terms of service effectively. So when they have a community standard and they say they don't want certain things on their platform, our position is that we're helping them make sure that content doesn't exist and that they correctly identify it. So when they say there shouldn't be hate speech, the things a community that's being affected by the hate speech would identify as hate speech are also recognized by the platform. On the other hand, we're also making them accountable. So, you know, we point out the gaps. So there's a tension there. You know, the way we discuss it is that they've got their position, we've got ours, and through discussion and through sharing examples and getting into the detail, hopefully we bring those positions closer together which means the gap between what's happening online and what the public expects, that gap is reduced and things become closer to what people expect to see.
Now, what difficulties do you face day to day in terms of operations, and what difficulties have you faced in the past?
The main difficulty we have is funding, just finding the money to keep going. We are a charity. We're supported by donations. In Australia, they're tax deductible, but the rest of the world, people do donate to us. They don't get anything back for that other than, you know, supporting us and knowing that the money's going to a good cause. We do also get attacked. We get threats. We get people trying to hack us all the time. You know, from a technical point of view, we find it quite amusing when we put up hand-coded static web pages and people try running scripting to try and get to the database. To, you know, there ain't no database there, mate. Yeah. You know, so we have to build our systems to be pretty robust. But, you know, there is a level of emotional pressure that comes just from dealing with this sort of content, reading through the examples. I mean, you know, you've got someone reading through a report of a woman that's being threatened with rape repeatedly and threatened with violence. We're dealing with that sort of content all the time. We're dealing with cases where people are being, you know, threatened with being, you know, shot or stabbed or you know, whatever it is. And, you know, at the lower level, people just being excluded from society, repeatedly told they're not welcome. So, you know, that itself takes a toll.
So how is action taken? I mean, if you do report various cases, how is action taken? Is it reported to the police, and where does it go from there?
Okay, so we do get reports via email, via messages on Facebook, etc. But the main way we get information, other than what we find ourselves, is through the fightagainsthate.com tool. People log in, they paste in the URL of something online, and it goes into a big database which we run. It's all cloud-based and built to expand and grow. We extract items from that database. We use those for our briefings and for our reports. And we also use them for confidential reports which don't go up on our website. Those confidential reports normally go directly to government, often to law enforcement. And unlike our public reports, we intentionally avoid identifying any individuals. We remove and redact all the names and all of the photographs of people. The reports for government include that information. And we often specifically go and look at where a person is, what jurisdiction they're in, and then providing it to the correct law enforcement agency so that it's up to them then to take the next step and take action. But we find that law enforcement may want to take action, but the number of technical staff they've got is not nearly enough, which is, again, job opportunities for young professionals that are interested in the area. They are looking for people across the world, but it's a limited pool. So what we can do is use our technical skills to produce the report that eliminates a lot of the technical hurdles, that says this is the content, this is where the person is. Often we find things like people have posted pictures of their vehicle with the rego, you know, the license plate visible. If we can give that to law enforcement and they can run it through their system, they can identify someone immediately. So if we can get rid of those sorts of that sort of legwork, it means they can take action. Whereas without us stepping in and doing that, often the officer on the beat gets a report, something's online, and they go, oh, it's online, it's all too hard. So we work with them to remove those gaps. As I mentioned, we do also do a certain amount which is dealing with counter-terrorism and with countering violent extremism. That sort of content goes from us to police and then on to intelligence services. So we deal with that too.
There has been a lot of concern in terms of, you know, cyber attacks and the online world expanding. And many of us feel that, you know, the federal police and police in general are underprepared for what's coming in the next 10 to 20 years. There has been a huge, you know, rise of job offerings in the cyber prevention, cyber crime prevention. And it's quite interesting to hear your view on that. Now, my last question really is, you know, IEEE is such a multiculturally diverse organization. In your opinion, what can IEEE young professionals do to be a part of this and to prevent online hate?
I think the first thing is being aware of the problem, understanding the many different types of online hate which are out there, you know, whether it's race-based or religion-based or gender-based or sexuality-based. whatever it is, we need to recognize and identify it when we see it. But we need to do that not just as people in the community. We need to do that as professionals. We need to do that as engineers and computing professionals, and people who, as professionals, have a code of ethics. And our code of ethics says that one of the things we do is we spread understanding about technology, its implications, and that includes some of the harm it can cause. So I would encourage young professionals to speak to their co-workers, to speak to their families, to speak to their friends, and to spread understanding of some of the dangers and some of the problems that can result and what people can do about it. The first step when things occur is reporting it to the platform concerned. The second step, I'd say, is to report it to our fightagainsthate.com system. The reason is then we have transparency. What our system lets us do is take those reports from the public and monitor whether the social media companies respond, how long it takes them, and find the gaps where they aren't responding. And over time, that allows the system to improve. It means we know where things are going wrong and can put in place things to try and improve them. So that's the first step. For those that are interested, again, I'd encourage people to look at jobs in the area, because we need more people with more technical skills in all sorts of places, both working for government, working for private companies, researching in universities. It's a big and growing field, and we don't yet have the experts we need to deal with it.
So I guess I did say it was my last question, but you've just opened up another interesting point. Would you say there are opportunities for IEEE young professionals, recent graduates, or maybe final year students who would be willing to volunteer with your organisation and help out?
Yeah, most certainly. We look for volunteers to train on producing some of the briefings and reports. We also do a lot of work looking at the social implications of technology. We're always looking for people to help write for us on these different topics. We also develop our own code. I mean, the fightagainsthate.com software is developed in-house. Half our staff are technical people. We're always happy to have volunteers.
Absolutely. Thank you very much, Andre. It's been a pleasure talking to you today. There you have it, young professionals. Dr. Andre Obola talking to us about the online hate prevention, which he has been involved in for quite a while and is very passionate about. Plenty of opportunities for volunteers to take up roles. That just goes to show that IEEE volunteers and members work in diverse areas of expertise. So thank you very much again, Andre, and that was a pleasure.
Okay, thank you.